Okay, let's get started. I have a little bit of a sore throat, so hopefully you can all hear me and understand me. First of all, is there any questions that you might have on last week's material or your project or something that's been bugging you or a sports question about the 49ers? Okay. If you ever have any questions that come up in, during the day or outside of class, please email them to me or go to the suggestion box and fill that in. It's important that you let out those questions so they can be answered and addressed. Same thing about make sure you sign the attendance form during the break, if you haven't done it already, and take an evaluation form. Margaret's handing out some of them. And it's really, really interesting to see what comments come back on the evaluation form. So thanks a lot for doing that. So for people working on projects, I want to share with you some thoughts from the students from, I think this is actually 2 years ago now. So this isn't me proclaiming what you should do. These are students who went through the process last year or even before and are telling you what they would have done differently. But they're actually talking to you guys. Okay. Spend more time empathizing. Engage in longer brainstorming processes and do it repeatedly. Define the problem as specifically as you can. Prototyping early is a must. This comes up many times. Seek out more users to talk to. Involve user group throughout the entire process. Prototype often. It's really important that you prototype fast, even if it's something that you're going to throw away. I value all your prototypes, so make sure you keep them or take a picture of them. Include them in your reports because the prototypes are really important. Determine a need as quickly as possible. Invest more time in talking to students and bouncing off ideas. If you want to talk to the class about your project, if you're stuck on a part of your project and want a couple minutes to talk to the class about that, I can give you that time for you to do it. Okay. Utilize the teaching staff more, and this includes the people that are that can help you with your project, like the resource people that I talked about, as well as community members may be able to help you, and may be able to point you to other people who could help you out as well. So let me know. Keep in touch with users. Consult different professionals and
prototype
fast and quickly, because the faster you get through prototypes that don't work, you're going to get to the prototype that does work, and it's a necessary part of the process to go through prototypes that don't work. So it's not failure; it's the solution is on the other side of all these prototypes. So you have to go through these prototypes. So yesterday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and I was thinking in his I Have a Dream speech, he said this: I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by their skin, by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. So what do you think he really meant by that? What does that mean to you? Yes. Yes. The important thing is the content of your character. Okay. But is he really being so selfish and that he only wants that for his four kids? No. Well, what is it? What does he really mean there? Well, he's not talking about just his children.
Really the community of all people that the striving for goodness and righteousness impacts
sure I got all that, but I think you just said talking about not just children, but other people in general, everybody.
Okay.
And do you think it's just the color of people's skin that he... Could you extend that, perhaps, to a bigger group of people?
Okay. What would that bigger group of people include? Who would that... Kartik?
Basically includes, like, all sorts of diversities, like, be it people with disabilities, or be it, like, people who belong to different races, different ethnic groups, or all sorts of diversity that we can think of. Basically trying to say that all of these things matter really less when you compare it to maybe your character or how you are.
Okay, that's perfect. That's just what I want. So you can extend what he said to include people with disabilities. And you should judge all people by the content of their character, not by any physical disabilities that they might have, or mental disabilities, or whatever. So it's really important to understand diversity and to help each other out as much as we can. Okay. So I want to go through another little exercise here. This will be pretty short, but I do this every year because I think it's sort of interesting to look at. So I want to go back to the definition of disability as a health condition or physical impairment that prevents an individual from taking full advantages of life's opportunities, okay? So who is disabled using that definition? And I know some of the community members have seen this before, so let the students experience it for the first time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a statement. And judging by that one statement alone, I'm going to ask you, disabled or not disabled, okay? A 70-year-old Englishman with ALS cannot walk, talk, or personally perform any of the usual activities of daily living. He has only very limited volitional control of one finger and one facial muscle.
Disabled?
Yeah. Very disabled. Severely disabled is what we'd say. Okay? This individual employs a powered wheelchair for his mobility. So he can get around on his own, but disabled? Okay. Maybe a little less from what you read the first time.
Okay. Individual uses a speech output communication device to facilitate his communication.
Still disabled, right?
So I'm talking about Stephen Hawking, often described as
the smartest person alive.
So what separates Stephen Hawking's ability from disability?
A person who is so disabled that he can't move around,
yet
he's the smartest person, considered the smartest person alive. What makes that difference? How does he cross that gap? Oops, I heard somebody. But you were here before. It slipped out. He couldn't hold it back.
Right.
What kind of technology? Somebody else.
Fernanda.
Okay. I'll have to excuse you. Yes, assistive technology. Without his assistive technology, he really couldn't be the person that he is. And that's sort of an important thing to know, because for a lot of people with disabilities, they rely on their assistive technology to bring out the content of their character, right?
So that's really important. So the observation is that even people with very severe disabilities can achieve extraordinary stuff.
So it's important to include them as part of society rather than to exclude them. Yes.
Could you expand that to say that Stephen Hawking would have found a way without his assistive technologies, and that the answer is not why he is as great as he is because of technology? Because I want to tell you a thing I saw last night in this Depardieu version of The Count of Monte Cristo. There's this super old guy who can't communicate with anybody except through one of his eyes, can say vowels and the other can say consonants. And because he's with an old army officer that worked with him his whole life, they found a way without technology.
Yeah.
So it's just a little more humanism.
Yeah, well, technology certainly can help the situation, may make it easier to do that.
Except, you know, is a
catheter technology? Yes, as long as it helps you achieve, take advantage of life's opportunities.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
I also don't think that it's necessarily not humanistic to say that the technology is the thing that makes them be able to see the greatness, because ultimately, in his case, the technology is that which makes them be able to communicate. But the technology itself is a feat of human achievement, and ultimately is a product of humans trying to make humanity better for everybody. So it's not necessarily saying that we're relying on technology as this other separate thing that makes us human. It's really technology is a human invention that helps us become more.
You know, expanding on that a little bit more, we learned last year that a service dog is a piece of assistive technology. Am I right? Would you agree with that? Would Ranger agree with that? Okay. Well, you can think of another person who's a caregiver or something as maybe a piece of assistive technology as well. Because without that person being around, that person may not be able to achieve what he or she wants to. So, keeping open definitions. Nate.
Even if Stephen Hawking assumed to be the smartest person in the world, if he hadn't done anything, then it wouldn't matter, I guess. And the fact that technology enables him to do something, communicate is a brilliant to us in some fashion, is, I would say, irregrettable.
Thank you. Margaret.
So I think that I once read a very interesting about him, and that his vision was very complex at some time, that the older he grew, the more he lost his personal stuff. But then, before all that, he was really smart and had the ability. So technology helped his father make himself to be what he dreamt of becoming, and not just get finished. So yes, I agree that no, the technology doesn't make him smart as smart, but it just facilitates him to actually be who he was at the time. So the content is what it comes from.
Richie.
Yeah, I was going to say that the technology kind of helps us as much as it helps him, because it's a means through which he can communicate and help society, or help humanity. So he's like using the technology, and we're learning from him, and it's for me.
And as I mentioned maybe right at the start, you know, Stanford is a piece of assistive technology, because you need that to bring out your intelligence, which is the concept of your character again, to get you the place where you are now. So, I mean, you go through many years and a lot of money in getting yourself habilitated to the point where you can give back to society. So everything is assistive technology, basically. Okay. Who is disabled? Okay. Superman came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of other men. Disabled? Able. Super able, right? Okay. Ready? Superman with kryptonite. Abled or disabled? Disabled, right. Okay. So there are situations that can cause temporary impairments, even in the most able-bodied individuals. My office mate broke his thumb. Told me, I can't send emails anymore. It's hard for me to use the blackboard. So he's getting better, but you know, he had this broken thumb. You can have allergies and be totally disabled, you know, for a day or whatever. So there are these kinds of temporary disabilities that that come your way. So what's the point of all this? So with Stephen Hawking, you may not be able to make an accurate determination of a person's abilities with limited or incomplete information. If I just told you a little bit, you would get the impression that a person is disabled. But, you know, with more information, you'd be able to make a better determination not that it's important to determine if somebody is able or disabled or able-bodied, but and in other cases, you may be fed inaccurate information, you know, because of
politics,
because of, you know, somebody promotes themselves as something that they're not. Advertising, you know, is made to sway you one way or another to buy their product. You know, sometimes even news and movie reviews are meant to sway you as well. So it's not everything you hear is accurate. You have to make your own determination. Okay, so for that. There are hidden conditions that can affect a person's ability, and sometimes you might not be able, because of these hidden disabilities, get a good representation of the content of their character because of a brain injury or PTSD or other psychological factors. And there are a lot of hidden disabilities as well that you may make an assumption on. For example, last year in this class, there was a woman, a freshman, who looked like a perfectly ordinary student, and yet she had a disability and had a hard time with classes and stuff. But they, you know, look at her and says, well, she's ordinary looking. In fact, maybe she's good looking, and, you know, maybe, you know, you would have some kind of expectation maybe on the way a person looks of their disability status, but that isn't always the case either. So so you don't know. So I want to spend just a couple minutes in going over what Debbie Kenny said last week on Thursday, and whether you know it or not, she was all talking about the design development process. She talked about activities in daily living and the problems that they present to people with disability. She talked about her perception of how devices are prescribed for individuals in a setting like the VA. Who are the stakeholders in providing information? How are devices paid for? High and low tech devices, we saw a bunch of those. The instruction that's needed, the abandonment that sometimes happens with devices when they're not prescribed adequately. She gave a lot of examples of what you should do to make the design, development, and prescription and use process better. And these are things that, you know, we've talked about already. You know, knowing the user, involving people, everybody, take an iterative approach, use the appropriate level of technology. You're concerned about prices and resources. So, you know, you need to know all this stuff. If you're going to be designing a device, you have to know all this stuff. You know, how are they going to use it? Who's going to pay for it? What are the what is expected of caregivers, of spouses, and things like that? So all these things come into play when you're designing an assistive technology device. It's not just the device itself. It's how it's the global way it's going to be used. And somebody contributed this very nice website, Designing with People, from the UK, so that looks like a really good website that can help you with your projects. I want to mention one more thing about lectures. I come up with the lecture topics like in the summer, and I seek out people to give these lectures. And certainly there's more projects. There's like 32 projects, which is a lot more than the number of lectures. So the net result is that the lectures may not pertain to the projects. So, for example, there's no lecture on Magical Bridge Playground project, even though there's three teams working on that. And even though we're talking about exoskeletons, we're not going to have any... doing any projects with that. So the lectures and the projects have a little bit of a separation there. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about community members too. Community members, raise your hand. Okay, great. So, what makes up a community member? Well, sometimes there are students not enrolled in the course. A couple of weeks ago, I had a couple OT students from Samuel Merritt College. And why do they come here? Because they don't get a course like this at their college. So I met them at the Abilities Expo and they were here. We have a lot of people here from the Office of Accessible Education, including Terry, who you'll hear from next week. And there's people from the local area, like Fred. Fred, why are you here? Why are you here year after year?
This is my fourth year, because it's so interesting, and every year is different, and because I have three artificial joints.
Okay, thanks, Fred. We have a number of people here with disabilities. Some of them have suggested projects. And some people are actually sell assistive technology devices. So they all add to the discussion. I hope you take advantage of them all because they all have lots of information. And in general, seminar courses like this are open to the public. I advertise this on Stanford events, so I might get different people all the time. And like Fred said, learn more about assistive technology and to attend interesting lectures. So that's why they're here. So how many people saw this product? It says Google Smart Lens. So this is a device that measures blood glucose through tears. And this device, I would imagine, is like an RFID device. So there's a transmitter that will ping this and will transfer energy so it can respond with the blood glucose from tears, which is hard to believe that you can get that information from your eye, but that's interesting. So this was done by a spin-off, not a spin-off of Google, but a part of Google called Google X. So these guys at Google are looking at assistive technology. And I know a bunch of people that are working at Google who have disabilities. And in all big companies, they're really concerned about having a wide market. So they're looking at how their products could be designed for people with disabilities. And a lot of these places like Microsoft and Apple have big departments that look at putting accessible stuff in their computers and making sure the websites are accessible as well. So what I'm saying is this isn't a small thing that I'm talking about. Class, everybody is interested in assistive technology in some way or another. So So even big companies are interested in this kind of stuff. I want to talk about BACES. It's a bunch of challenges. There's three different challenges. E-challenge, which is looking at business models, social challenges, business ideas, products. They're looking at working prototypes. So unfortunately, the deadline is at the end of this week. But there are a lot of student design competitions coming up as well. So if you're working on a project, think about entering a design competition. And chances are, what you're going to write up as your report, you can use, you know, to enter a design competition. And it'd be great if you could do that, you know, at least get some recognition, maybe get a free trip, maybe get some money. So I'll give you a link to those things later on. Okay, people who have missed lectures, it'd be good if you can make them up within 1 week. And I also want to mention that Arna and I take photos, and those are posted on the website as well. So take a look at those, because it's really interesting stuff. For people working on projects, either individual or team projects, I think it would be good for you to get in touch with me once a week, either informally by email or meet with me, just to discuss the progress of your project. I want to know that you're working on something, that you're making progress. If I don't hear from you, I can only assume that you've done nothing the entire week. So let me know, you know, what you're up to. It's just like calling your parents once a week. You know, I want to know that you're working on stuff. I always made a point to talk to my family once a week. You know, so. If you have suggestions, we have this anonymous suggestion box, and important thing for you in working on a project is, you know, getting your shop pass and getting your safety orientation lecture. How many people have done that so far? Okay, great. Thanks. Was it fun? Was it tough? Was it? How was it, Evan?
Wasn't too tough. It was interesting to see the machine. It was my second time, so.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't as fun as the first time.
Who went through it for the first time? Yes.
So what was your impression? Like looking at the machines and how many different things you can do.
Okay. Ready to jump in?
Yeah.
All right. That's good. Okay, so Thursday, this is going to be an awesome lecture on Thursday. And Fernanda agrees with me. So we're having Catherine Strasser. She's the senior controls engineer at a company up in Berkeley called Exobionics. And she's going to be talking about exoskeletons for rehab. And one of our community members, Fernanda, is going to be test piloting it for you. And this is a new version, too. So it's going to be awesome. So right here on our stage.
This will be their third model, and I've been involved in the first one. So I'm excited.
Yeah, so it's going to be
tough, okay.
No, I'm not going to be tough. I think it's going to be awesome. So what we're going to do today is have a panel discussion by students with a disability from Stanford. And they're going to talk about a little bit about themselves and their disability and the technology they used and the challenges they faced and overcome to be great Stanford students. So we'll take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to be reconvening right here and have the panel. So we'll see you in about 5 minutes. Sure to grab a cookie. That'll keep your brain fed with sugar. Hey, Dwight.
Lecture last week, and I'm just a little confused. So a lot of what it was going to be asking questions of the two panelists who are up here, and I'm not sure if they should try out the physical objects that were given to them at the end of it, but if they were, it's going to be a hard thing for me to write a page about if I didn't see them, and I couldn't tell if they were suitable.
Right.
And I don't have pictures of the devices.
There's pictures on them.
They're okay.
Yeah, but they're not described. Why don't you just do the best you can with the content that's there. I want to expect you to know what each device is.
So you'd rather me just write about the parts that I was asked?
No. If you're already at it, then there's no sense for you to write about that. But review the stuff where you weren't at. Just give me a short impression.
Okay. Do you want that as an attachment or just in an email?
In an email.
Okay.
I'd like the opportunity to ask the community members.
Hi. Right. Yeah, this is sort of a new issue. I've actually seen some students with service dogs. I think there are stress or depression. I attended a guy from Phillips. Different kinds of lighting, how it affects mood. There's people sort of into that already. The right kind of colors will brighten up the room.
what kind of light is also in the night. I'm not sure how it would work for everybody listening. For coming. I know this is like sometimes it's really hard to be open and talk about yourself and disability, so we all appreciate you coming to class and talking about something that may be sort of difficult to deal with, but you're doing it for educational purposes, so thanks again. So we're going to start with Kareem, because Morgan isn't here. She sent me an email and she can't be on campus. So pass around the microphone. On a bit, about 5 or 10 minutes.
Hello?
I guess I could.
Yep, go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Kareem Edouard. I'm a doctoral student in the School of Education in the Learning Sciences and Technology Design department. I'm an educator. I've been a teacher, high school teacher, for about 10 years. I guess I have to go backwards. Well, let's do this. Why am I here and what happened? So last semester, so I'm actually very new to this. And this is actually the first time that I've actually spoken to anyone in an open forum, I guess. So I was sitting in my stats class, and so I obviously made it all the way to Stanford, and I couldn't, for the life of me, solve the work, get through the work. And in my undergrad, back in 99, 2000, actually was a computer science student at University of Florida. And it just wasn't working for me. So finally, my my TA asked what was wrong, because the writing was completely illegible. I wasn't very coherent. So we couldn't figure it out. So they sent me to the Office of Accessible Education, and that's where we started down the road, where Dr. Nicole Fish, shout out, sent me to take 18 hours worth of tests. And it was a three-day process, and ultimately they came back to say that I had working memory issues and dyscalculia. So we'll start with working memory issues. So pretty much from what I understand, because I'm still very new to this and we're working through it, is that my short-term memory and my long-term memory are at odds with each other. So the way it was explained to me is that if you can remember 10 things, I can only remember 3. And how it kind of presented itself is that it's very difficult for me to do division. So I have to try to obviously multiply and do subtraction and then the remainder. And this was always a problem for me. And all throughout high school and even through undergrad, I would just kind of push it off. And I would always blame myself. I would say I was lazy, I didn't care, I wasn't trying hard enough. And later on, last semester, it was explained that the amount of effort for me to have gotten here at Stanford is almost Herculean because of trying to overcome. And we'll talk about a little bit how I overcome. Dyscalculia was another situation I was working with where I would see numbers almost backwards. Numbers wouldn't process correctly. But once again, it was on me saying that I was lazy and I didn't care enough and I wasn't trying hard enough to remember these numbers or to kind of remember the formulas. And especially going through high school, because I went to a magnet high school, so it was all about, you know, very competitive, highly competitive like Stanford. So I would have my friends would memorize all of these calculus formulas and I wasn't doing it. So once again, back to being, and I keep stressing this laziness because it was later presented to me that that was also part of me hurting myself and that was my answer in reflective of the world around me. So, moving forward, after these battery of tests, I had to accept that now I needed some help. And that was a process, because as a black man, it's difficult to have that conversation where, am I good enough? So now I have, on top of that, coming to Stanford and dealing with the stereotype threat, the microaggressions that I was receiving in my classroom spaces, now I have to talk about that I have a learning disability, which is very difficult. So, taking my technology background, we decided to craft a plan, or I started crafting a plan, and I came up with a tool set. So I kind of brought my tool set with me. There was a couple of options, just wanted to throw in there before I pull out my toolbox. There was a medication option, and it was very viable at the time, but I decided not to take the medication because I also have adult ADHD and ADD, so it was very hard for me to focus, and I still have those problems where I can only focus for maybe 4.5 minutes, and I didn't know that, quote-unquote, everyone else can focus for 15, 20, 30 minutes at a time, but I only can read a book for maybe 5 minutes, and then I'd put it down and I'd start wandering. And once again, I kept saying to myself, you're just lazy. You don't want to sit through the book. Excuse me, it's very difficult, but I'm working through it. So LiveScribe was the first step. for me to remember. I don't, has anyone used LiveScribe? The LiveScribe pen? So basically what's really cool, and what I use in my math class, is this pen. So when you write, the pen actually optically registers what you're writing, and it also records. So let me see if I can get it going on with the mic here. Let's see if I do it with this pen. So for my stats class, I just push the pen.
Actually, we're born on different days.
So it'll just go to any page without necessarily prompting it, just touching the page. And it would remember where I was, and wherever I tapped, it would just start talking. So that really helped me, because one of the issues with my memory was that as I was taking notes, I wasn't taking efficient notes because I kept trying to remember while the teacher was presenting. So it was just always a foot race. And then the other problem I'd run into was that I was constantly angry with myself because my notes didn't look good. So if I didn't actually start, so if the class started, let's say, at 4 o'clock, and I wasn't there exactly at 4 o'clock to start my notes, and I walked in at 4:15, or I didn't get the process started at 4:15, I just wouldn't take notes anymore. And that was also part of the kind of like the psychology of the process of, and it made it very difficult for me. So that was one. The next thing I started doing was I used to write. So I would always make sure that I would constantly be writing my schedule down to keep myself organized. So I would do it two ways. Have my little notepad and just like assortment of pen, and I would always make a checklist. So that way I can remember that, well, I took care of this, and this is something that's coming up. Another thing that became very helpful for me was Evernote. So Evernote allowed me to also memorize and kind of make checkbox, but also, too, I can write mobily with Evernote. So whatever I wrote on my cell phone would then would sync to my laptop, and I'd be good to go. Last, I want to show you quickly, was that, so my cell phone, so I have to read, when you at the PhD level, I have to read probably, 2,000 pages a semester of just journals. And I don't have the capacity, and I guess we all at some point don't have the capacity or the time, so I would have I downloaded this PDF reader that would actually read my PDFs for me. Let's see if I can get it going for you. Hold on one second. Just getting fired up here. But as I pull it up, here it is. So I would go to the gym.
Education 403X, Education's Digital Future, Fall Quarter 2012, Stanford University.
So I would just load all my PDFs, and then as I'm at the gym or in the car, I'm reading. Or it's reading for me, it's giving me the first pass. So then when I would get home, I would then do a second pass quickly and take notes. And then later in the week, I would then start reading my notes. So I had multiple passes at the content, which would keep it fresh in my mind. So as I kind of bring it to an end, just pass it around, one, it was very difficult to accept that I had a learning disability, especially when, you know, I'm relatively healthy. I play sports here as a graduate student, and I got all the way to the mountain, right? So I'm getting my PhD at Stanford. This is the top. And I felt bad that I still needed a little more help, that I got all the way through this at 32 years old, and now I need to sit down and talk about a problem that I had. But being reflective, and this is where kind of the smile, I'm also a special education teacher. I didn't throw that in there. So I've been writing, I've been writing IEPs, and I've been helping my students, and I've been completely blinded by my own issues. So I've probably sat through maybe 50 IEP meetings just through a year. And I would give my students interventions, I would help them, but I never paid attention to my own. So sometimes it takes a lot of strength for you to kind of, like Michael Jackson says, starts with the man in the mirror, to realize that you need help. And why I'm here is to share with you guys, and one, to kind of relieve that burden off myself, to say that if you accept and you grind through it, then there's something beautiful at the end, which allows me to kind of talk with you guys. And if any one of you in whatever level, whether you're undergrad, graduate, or just whatever level that you're at, that if you need the help, do not feel ashamed. We all need a little bit of help. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Nate, you're on.
What?
Yeah.
Sir?
Hi, I'm Nate, and since 2006, I have been a patient with Crohn's disease. Over here, you can see just a sampling of the fun internal stuff that can happen with Crohn's. And over here you can see where it can happen. And it's literally anywhere along your entire gastrointestinal tract. So, what sort of problems do we see? From the external side, you can see diarrhea, particularly with blood, constipation, abdominal pain, loss of appetite, weight loss, joint pain. Those are the big ones. There are a whole bunch more issues that you can see. Internally, almost always presents with some combination of ulceration and inflammation. The ulcers develop into either abscesses or fistulas. Bowel obstruction is relatively common. Nutritional deficiencies are common. And, of course, there are going to be side effects for the drug treatment. Here's my weight, basically since I was diagnosed. So, over here, about 155 pounds, I was a teenage student going through puberty, and then I started taking a weights class, and my weight started going up as I was putting on muscle mass. And then right about the middle of the year is when I suddenly, just for some completely unexplained, as far as I knew, reason, couldn't eat anything for a week. I would eat it, and then within 2 hours, I would throw it up, and obviously, I was confused as to what might be happening. And my weight continued to decline until basically the end of the year is when I hit my low point. 145 pounds as a 16, 17-year-old who had just basically finished a weight training class. I actually missed all of the school in those 6 months. So really only 3 months of school. And when I came back, my class of 45 people didn't recognize me at all. They thought they had a new transfer student midway through the year. I basically looked like a skeleton. That's about when I got my diagnosis with Crohn's disease. And they put me on some medications that helped bring me up to a somewhat more stable weight. But they never really worked right, and my weight continued to decrease. And then hit a really low point when I was in Germany for 6 months. And I ended up dropping back to that 150-pound line. Came back from Germany. My medications got shuffled. My weight picked back up. And middle of last year, I discovered that I react very poorly to pain medication. And my weight dropped quite dramatically. Again, this is a problem, but they shuffled my meds around, got me colored back under control, gaining weight, might have lost track, yeah, here we go, gaining weight, whoops, I was so healthy that I actually shot above
where I should be,
and
got sick again when I was in Germany a couple months ago.
But for perspective, that's normal weight gain
for someone who's in a weights class.
Had I continued improving my lifts at the rate I was, I probably would have been about here.
About then.
That's a drastic decrease. That's extremely unhealthy. I was losing about 8 pounds a week. And typically, if you're dieting, you don't want to lose more than about 2 pounds a week. So obviously something was very, very seriously wrong, aside from the aforementioned symptoms. Medication's great, but during this entire time here, I was also eating 6,000 calories a day to maintain weight. I was only getting nutritional benefits from about a third of that. So, there's some pretty clearly drastic stuff here. However, it's not completely hopeless. There's a nice long list of treatments that are available. Here are the ones that I personally have been on. This is Imuran, and it's a fairly weak immunosuppressant. It's often used to prevent rejection after organ transplants. I'm on it right now. Seems to work fairly well once you get your dose set and test right. This is the molecule for Remicade, which is a IV injection. You get it every 4 to 8 weeks, just depending on the progression of your disease. And what it's called a TNF-alpha blocker. TNF-alpha is a tumor necrosis factor, which basically brings about inflammation in areas that your body thinks need it. This is sulfasalazine, which is actually the first man-made drug. It's a combination of a sulfa molecule, which helps a lot with inflammation, and aspirin, which also helps a lot with inflammation. So it's still used today, 55, 60 years later, for Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, which is closely related, and rheumatoid arthritis. And then this is prednisone, which is up there on my list of least favorite drugs of all time. It's a steroid. Your body produces a little bit of it naturally, but the levels that you need to bring a Crohn's flare under control are upwards of 40 milligrams per day, and your body is comfortable at around 5 milligrams per day. You begin to get a really short temper. You begin to get really nasty acne. There's a symptom called moon face, which is because your tissues retain a lot of fluids, and you look about 30 pounds heavier than you actually are. In addition, it can cause some pretty severe abdominal bleeding on its own. But thankfully, through the patience of my doctors and about 15 different iterations of my meds over the past 2 years, and probably 40 over the past 6, I'm reasonably healthy. I'm able to come here to class today, which has traditionally been a big problem for me. And I'd be certainly glad to answer any questions that y'all have later. Also, some important resources. First one is the OAE here at Stanford. They can come up with accommodation plans for any of your any disabilities you may have. In my case, there were days where I just could not leave my bed, and if I was leaving my bed, it was to go to the bathroom. Obviously, I couldn't go to any tests or labs during those days, so I was allowed to make those up at the next possible meeting. Late homework allowances, for the same reason, there are just some days you can't do anything, can't make it to class, can't turn anything in. Again, really necessary in my case. And this lack of attendance requirement. A lot of classes here at Stanford have attendance requirements for perfectly good reasons. Lectures are important. You'll learn a lot from your professors. If you can't leave bed, you can't go to lecture. So I was able to make other arrangements with my professors. Some afternoon classes had athletes, so classes were recorded, and I could get copies of those videos. Dave here posts the lectures online so that I could download them and listen to them later.
The other big resource is the CCFA, or Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America,
and they keep up with all the research that's happening around the world on Crohn's disease, patient connection resources, fundraising. Crohn's only gets a couple million dollars a year in funding, and in research terms, that's absolutely nothing. Right now, I'm working on a project at SRI International that is about $4 million, and that's the smallest project my group has.
But we're doing what we can, and so far, we've identified
one of the major gene mutations that leads to Crohn's disease, and the thought is that genetic therapy, when it's available in the future, might be the source for a cure.
All right. Hi, everyone. This is my second time doing this talk. I don't really remember what I said the first time, so if you were here before, hopefully it won't be too much of a repeat. So I'm Aubrey Ruth. When I say that, you probably hear me say Audrey, because I cannot close my lips to pronounce binomial sounds. I cannot smile, generally cannot produce facial expressions. So what I always say is, if I don't smile at your jokes, it's not because I don't think you're funny. I have moderate to severe hearing loss, so I can't hear high-pitched sounds, and I have a very hard time, I pretty much can't understand whispers. Also, if you ever watch a movie with me, I'm going to turn on the subtitles. In terms of, so I could walk and run and ski and do taekwondo. I didn't really like it that much, but up until I was in fourth grade. In fourth grade is when I realized I could not lift my arms above shoulder height. So around that time is when I got my diagnosis. I have a severe form of muscular dystrophy. And so the deal with muscular dystrophy is that in a non-disabled person, if someone exercises or uses their muscles, those muscles get stronger. But with muscular dystrophy, the more I use my muscles, the weaker they get. So for example, I'm right-handed, which means that, I use my right hand a lot more. And now at this point, my right hand is a lot weaker than my left hand. I don't have as much motion or strength in my right hand. Also, miscellaneous muscle weakness throughout my body, especially in the shoulders and arm. It was in eighth grade that I transitioned completely to using a mobility device at school, although I still walk around at home. And then at some point in high school, I switched to using a power wheelchair at home as well as a scooter at school. In terms of assistive technology, in elementary school, middle school, I think high school, I used to use hearing aids, but I don't anymore, because the ones I was using, the technology has advanced a lot since I used them, but there was just too, I felt that they did not, I felt that they amplified all noise, not just the noise I needed to be amplified. It amplified my own voice a lot, so it was as annoying. And I figured that I pick up enough that I don't need to wear them all the time, so now I just don't use them. Mobility devices. This is called a Pride Revo scooter. Pride is the company, Revo is the model, and this model is actually out of production now. This is very unfortunate for me because I like this model. This particular scooter is the third one that I've had. The first two broke down. At home and in the dorm at Stanford, I knew a power wheelchair that looks more like prison over there. So it had a joystick, and the front is pretty clear, but it's also bigger, and generally I find it convenient for using at home, not convenient for going around school. I have a lot of frustration one, even this manure is nice, and the one I use at home. In a way, I think of them as clones that don't fit me, and I have to wear them all the time. I think that my fiancé is that I would not be here without the support of my family and without the support of the OED and all the accommodations that so I'll make a somewhat political statement by saying that nobody overcomes disability. Rather, disability is accommodated. So, disability will always be part of me, but it does not have to be something that prevents me from participating. So, thank you all, and happy to answer any questions.
So, good evening, everyone. I'm Karthik, and I'm a freshman here at Stanford, and I intend majoring in computer science. And to begin with, let me give you a little bit of background about myself, so, you know, where I come from. And I'm actually an international student from India, so my perspective is slightly different from the other speakers. I'm blind. I suffer from retinopathy of prematurity, which is basically a disease. So I was premature, was in the incubators, and was supplied excess oxygen, because of which I lost my sight. I started my education at a special school, basically gaining training in the specialized skills that I required, like mobility or braille assistive technology and stuff like that. And fortunately, this blind school had an integration program in place where they mainstreamed me. And so I started out at this regular school in grade one. And I started using braille in grade one, but the problem was I could not afford like the electronic note takers and braillers, etc., that are available here, because they're really expensive, and especially, you know, I coming from a middle-class family in India, the cost proved to be an impediment. So what I finally decided in grade two was I'll try to switch over to a computer totally. So I used my screen reader, which is basically a software which reads out whatever is there on the monitor. And probably, like, a lot of you know about it already. So I started working, like basically doing all of my subjects on the computer itself and taking my exams on the computer. So I used to get my question papers as soft copies and used to answer them and email them to my teachers for grading. So my high school, my middle school, I would say, was pretty good. Like, I did pretty much everything that every other student did, hang out with friends, procrastinate sometimes. And the work, yeah, it was a wonderful experience. High school, I would say grades 9 and 10 was also pretty good. I was exposed to labs the first time. And I remember, I think one of the major problems that I faced was the lack of awareness and insensitivity. So no one in my school knew how to accommodate a blind student. And I have never been exposed to a separate office working for students with disabilities before Stanford. So, you know, figuring out what would work for me, what options are available, was kind of hard. And so I remember the first day in lab, I was just sitting there with, you know, with no clue as to what needs to be done. And my teacher was like, yeah, you can just do whatever you want to do. Maybe just study for some other class or listen to music or whatever. So that was not something that I really liked or I wanted to do. And I worked out with my headmistress,
like, you know, basically, at least to that extent where if the experiments do not involve visual observations, I'd be allowed to perform the experiments. And basically, like, every other student was also paired because the apparatus was limited. So I could ask the student that I was working with to give me all the verbal descriptions, and I could give him the directions. At least that way I, you know, kind of would know what's happening in the lab and would get a basic understanding of the concept involved. So yeah, it was pretty good even in grades 9 and 10, going pretty well. And then grade 10 was when I think it was the end of grade 10 when I faced the biggest challenge. And that was, in India, you're supposed to choose an educational stream at the end of grade 10. So you kind of commit to an educational track for the rest of your high school. I was pretty much interested in science, wanted to study it, was really passionate about computer science. But again, that wasn't an option that the authorities thought I'd be able to pursue. So it took me like about 8 months to convince the Central Board of Secondary Education in India that yes, I was capable of pursuing science. But then finally got the permission to study science, and that was a great challenge in itself because there was no other student that I could look up to if I ran into problems. And of course, there was there were no resources whatsoever. Like some of the blind schools told me that science was impossible, and I made the worst decision of my life by taking science, which was really disappointing. But I really wanted to try it out, and so we had this option that we could study a stream for 6 months, and then we could change the stream if we found that it was not, you know, what we wanted to do. And I started studying science. It was hard. And also what made it much harder was that none of the textbooks were available in accessible format. So I used electronic textbooks. I used to scan my textbooks until grade 10, and then once I had them scanned, I could just read them with my screen reader. But this approach did not quite work in 11th and 12th because of the numerous symbols and technical notations in math and science. And I tried getting a few textbooks from the publishers, but again, lack of awareness was again a problem, so all of them denied. The only option that remained was to type out all of my textbooks in entirety before I could study. I agreed to do that too. So I typed out all of my physics, chemistry, mathematics textbooks. When it was the half-yearly exams in grade 11, I topped the entire grade 11 in my school. And that was kind of encouraging. The teachers, I think that really helped me in the rest of my high school. Because the teachers started cooperating. And even in the classroom, they used to read out whatever was written on the board. And that really helped because there were so many diagrams also. And it was not possible to visualize the diagram just by understanding the verbal description that the teacher gives, like, you know, in a second or maybe in 5 seconds. So then I used to sit down with them, and they used to explain me the diagram. Pattern diagrams were, again, a problem because we in India did not have the facility to produce tactile diagrams. It is available at a few schools, one or two, but it still, you know, isn't that common. And especially for science, it's non-existent as of now. So they used to give me verbal descriptions. I used to understand it that way. We also used quite a lot of objects that you find commonly at home. You know, all of those all sorts of lids and boxes and I don't know what not, bottles, and assemble it in different configurations just to emulate different shapes. And like, obviously, it was much more complicated than elementary shapes in high school, especially when I was dealing with trigonometry or mechanics or electric circuits. So somehow, they used to draw it in my palm, and from the way they used to draw it, I used to get an idea of the spatial layout and could visualize the diagram. And somehow I managed science too. And okay, for graphs, I got to know of another software, which is MathTrax from NASA. And what it does is, suppose you have a curve
it converts that curve into its corresponding audio. So if a curve has a negative slope in a particular region and then has a positive slope, so the variation in the frequency basically gives you a qualitative idea of how the graph looks like. So that helped me to some extent. It also provided for a verbal description, so if I did not have someone to explain it to me, I could just use that software to get a description for myself. So all of this helped me quite a bit. I used MathType sometimes and wrote my documents in LaTeX because I was writing everything on a computer and turning it in for grading. And of course, used OCR, which is, again, another way of saying, like, I scanned all of my textbooks, whichever ones could be scanned. The next thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to go in for engineering in India. I'd never even thought about coming here. And even I was apprehensive, to be honest, to come this far, and so were my parents. So I approached the Indian Institutes of Technology in India, which are the premier tech schools in the country. Again, unfortunately, because of lack of awareness, they initially denied admission. Like they did not even allow me to take the entrance exam. And when they did, they unfortunately could not provide me the reasonable accommodations that I needed to take the test, which was again disappointing. So it took, after a year of writing letters to the IIT, I realized that it was not really worth it, because if they cannot provide me the accommodations that I need now, even if I go into the IITs, I'll be wasting 4 years of my life trying to, figure out workarounds, and that was definitely not the best way to go about it. And then I have relatives living here in the U.S., and they told me about the universities and, like, the excellent support system here, and that is when I started considering international admissions. And I reached out to the OAE in September. I remember my first email was, like, you know, probably the OAE would have assumed, well, who's contacting us? He knows nothing about how things work. And, like, that was, like, the weirdest message I could have ever composed. But the response that I got was the most encouraging reply that I ever received in my life. And so Stanford, from then on, was, like, the first choice for me always. That, you know, no matter what, I want to give it a shot. And I know it's really competitive, but, like, you know, I want to try. And then I took my SATs as late as January. Actually December and then January, and Stanford's SAT deadline was actually December, and I was actually pretty, I did not know if they would consider my application, but yeah, I'm fortunate to be here. So yeah, and here, I think, for the 4 months that I've been here have been, like, the best ever. Like, the OAE is absolutely amazing. I obviously do not have to type out anything now. It's just like, the expectation is just to study as any other person studies. So that's really great about the system here. And yeah, I can definitely show my assistive technology later if you're interested. You could basically work and see how graph is converted into its audio, or I'll be available to answer any questions that you have. So I guess that's my story.
And last but not least, we have Christopher.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm a junior majoring in bio. During my freshman year in high school, I was involved in an accident, and I had a spinal cord injury and something similar to a stroke. When I was originally injured, I couldn't move anything below my neck, and over a long time I've gotten better. My injury is incomplete, which means that not all of the nerve fibers in my neck are destroyed, but there is significant damage. It was kind of challenging going through high school, especially changing really rapidly like that, because I just switched schools. I was a freshman, I made new friends, and then I wasn't in school for a year, so that was kind of difficult in order to make new connections, I guess. I actually ended up having to transfer schools because my old school wasn't even wheelchair accessible, so that was also kind of difficult, but in the long run, it wasn't that bad. I don't really have a whole lot to say besides that. I use a lot of assistive technology. I use Dragon, which is a software that allows me to speak, and it types for me, which is really convenient, but I also have to edit a lot in case I say something that shouldn't end up in my paper. The other biggest school technology I use is my phone. Because of Siri now, I can do tons of things on my phone. I've written entire papers on my phone, so it's really convenient. I also use a lot of exercise devices that help me walk over land and ride a bike and stuff like that.
Evan, did you want to do your thing?
It's embarrassing to talk after these great presentations. I just wanted to ask anyone if, especially community members, if they have an project or idea that they'd be wanting to work on with me. I'm just taking the class for one unit and looking for project ideas. So if anyone wants help with something or would like to share something with me, I'd appreciate an idea.
Okay. Thanks. So let's thank these remarkable students. Fernando?
I'm very curious, all of you that use assistive device, whether it's manufacturer-directed or customized for you, that in all the years that you've been using it, have you given them feedback on how it enhances your lifestyle? And if you haven't, I suggest that you do, because they can learn from what kind of further advancement they can use from your experience. I would really, especially you, Chris, said, you utilize your phone so much, and whether it's Apple or whatever it is, I would make a contribution by getting in that company and say, this is how you help me, because when that happens, they can start, that it becomes a chain reaction, and they can even bring somebody and customize your own app.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. That is a good idea.
Okay. What I'd like to do now is thank these remarkable students for their candor and strength in presenting themselves. So it's 5:30, so anybody that has to leave can do so. And if you want to stick around and ask these students questions or come up and talk to them, this will be your opportunity. Thanks so much, and I'll see you on Thursday. It's going to be a fantastic lecture on Thursday.